Welcome to the Mudstack Podcast, all the fits that make news.
The whole world gone crazy!
Like, ladies and gentlemen,
it's like the Jeopardy intro.
It's I got to be careful because it's hard to have that professional opening, right? Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Mod State Podcast.
There it is.
Because it's just I'm kind of thinking comfortably numb or But anyway.
Jared, my brother-in-law's friend has no idea. Here he is. He's a session player for people like Reba McEntire. This guy's played for everybody and has no idea his work is on the intro to the podcast now. But I mean, I asked Jared, I said, hey, do you think he'd care? He's like, no, dude, he posted that on YouTube. All right. So
fair enough. Anyway, how you been, my friend?
Nate Welline, but
we're just different. That's, I don't know if that's quite my soloing style, but.
Yeah, you're not, you don't follow in the vein of David Gilmour.
I don't. I mean, I appreciate it. I don't. I wish I would. Like, I have this need for sort of fast-driving blues. I think the problem was the first ever, like, tablature book that I ever got for guitar was Stevie Ray Vaughan. And if I hadn't gotten that, I don't know that, I would have followed that. But, dude, if that's your first influence of, like, electric guitar is Stevie Ray Vaughan,
tough than yeah, ever.
Like, what you gonna, you know, I don't know. So,
as a young man, for me, listening, not that, I mean, I played piano for 20 years, but the first guitarist that I really was like, hey, what's he doing here, was Keith Richards. And so I approached mentally the idea of a guitarist completely different from the old school rhythm fabric. Mm-hmm. And so it makes me go, well, I follow rhythm. I mean, in a way, because of my obsession with Motown, I listen to rock and roll music or rock bands from a black music and old school R&B, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm following bass lines and stuff, and you don't get as much of that necessarily in quote unquote white boy music. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I remember
the early Stones give me that.
Yeah. I was going to say early, because I remember I got a guitar when I was, 12. In fact, I'm looking at it right now. It's a blue guitar right over there. Old Squire, like acoustic. And my dad pulled up, he had vinyls downstairs. So the first time he ever pulled out his vinyls, and he played America, which, you know, Horse with No Name, because it had a 12 string. He really liked the acoustic. And their first album was, I mean, talk about white boy. Their first album was, acoustic album. But anyway, then it was, I think the next thing we listened to was, a Stones album. I think it was Black and Blue.
Right.
Just, yeah, kind of kind of an obscure
Hot Stuff was the opening track.
Hot Stuff. Yeah, it was a kind of an obscure album.
It is.
And so it went from that to what was the I've been thinking a lot about music. I can't pinpoint the album. It was an early album
talking about the Stones still, or
Love in Vain? Yeah.
That was Let It Bleed.
Let It Bleed. That's exactly what it is. And that opening acoustic riff of Let It Bleed. But that was like, wow, this is the Stones. And you could trace them back to sort of this, because the British Invasion kind of stuff, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Robert Johnson song.
Yeah, exactly. But the whole British Invasion, other than maybe Clapton, which I liked, but even I got kind of bored of
Clapton.
Overrated. I just got kind of bored of it. Like, and it wasn't until, the Stones came into the picture that I was like, well, listen, if I'm going to try to epitomize anything of the British Invasion, it'll always be the Stones. Keith Richards was such a unique guitar player, and they just, the rhythm section was so awesome.
That's what I mean. Like, growing up, my mother was the one who introduced me to Motown. And so, I mean, for folks who don't know me, I probably sound terrible right now, but I always listened to rock and roll from that perspective of like a black R&B perspective. And the Rolling Stones really brought that element. I mean, they were about to go on Top of the Pops, I think, or Ed Sullivan maybe, and Mick Jagger famously said to somebody else in the band, he said, man, I really hope they don't think we're a rock and roll band. That's not what they wanted to be. And if you listen to songs like Miss You and, you know, the arguably disco beat and Sympathy for the Devil with a samba, like
they definitely were channeling and giving great reverence to the Delta blues players. Like it's very obvious in their music.
Yes, the music that I love, absolutely, electric blues could not exist without a lot of tremendous groundbreaking black guitarists and vocalists.
Yeah. So it's any
6 degrees.
Yeah. Anyway, so welcome to the news, political, and opinion podcast of the Mod State.
Yeah. Sorry, folks. We really like blues.
But yeah, we do happen to enjoy music.
You sound like John Mayer when you sing. It's a good thing.
Oh gosh, thanks. I you know, Stewie Griffin says, Brian, look at my baddie. Look at my baddie. It's like that's the way John Mayer says it.
You remember those jam sessions in DC?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, I remember some of it.
Yeah, I was just gonna say I remember of them. that's maybe the most important thing. I'm sure I have those recordings somewhere on another laptop, but yeah. Lord. You know, those are the recordings you make and it's just groovy, right? Like whatever headspace you're in, it's groovy. Well, it's fun. And then it isn't until years later that I pull those files out when I just resurrect the old laptop and it's like, oh my God, what were we thinking? I mean, it's maybe just because the recording itself wasn't in itself a good recording, but it's just all over the place. But anyway,
I still think that song we wrote was good. It was a good jam.
Yeah. I think it's, I miss jamming with people. I'll give you that. I got to play piano actually in a wedding I'm going to, and we leave for Europe next week from France. So I'm looking forward to that.
You're playing.
Yeah, I'm actually playing. Here's the trick. I promise we'll stop talking about music at the 10-minute mark. Yeah, see, the fun part is I can read music, but I can't I don't have the classical ability of sight reading and playing. Like that just has eluded me because I never practiced. But you know, I can hear something and definitely go for it. I can read it, but it would take me an extraordinarily long time and a lot of patience for me to actually knock it out. So
you're like my brother, you play by ear.
I do generally play by ear and with guidance of music. And the bride sent me over some songs, and a lot of them are just the one note melody. Like this is it, and it's got the name of the song.
It's like getting better.
So here's the problem. Herein lies the problem. It's really hard to find French songs on like the ISP I'm running because like it's like .co.uk kind of thing. Like it just doesn't. It's a different corner of YouTube, right? And
wait, do you mean songs on French websites or do you mean like by French people? Because I mean, I got to admit, like French pop is made more fun of than K-pop.
But dude, so here's the thing. God bless you if you live in France and you like French music, but
good for you.
Look, the compositions themselves are lovely. The recordings of them are, it's awful.
I mean, that's what I mean.
It
took so long to make for a reason.
It is just horrendous. So, and look, I hope no one that I meet at this wedding, I mean, it's not their fault, but anyway, well,
we're insulting my motherland. So
yeah, it's not their fault, but anyway, so it's, and a lot of what I do is listen to the words to get the transitions. And the problem is everything's in French and yes. I am so ignorant of the French language, you know, at least Spanish. I can muddle my way through Spanish, but French and the dialect, and it's just so foreign to me that it's been increasingly difficult to sort of learn these piano parts. But anyway,
I'm the opposite, but I'm not going to help you. Hmm. You must muddle your way through friend. And you know, the great news for us, and a perfect segue here, is that you're going to be in the town where the G7 was hosted.
That's correct. So independent of the G7 summit, our decision to stay in this town. But yeah, we're going to swing over to down to Bordeaux and then down to Brits. I believe that's my way of pronouncing it. So
one of them.
Yeah, we're going to stay down there and not going to do anything, man. We're just going to enjoy South France
a little bit.
In early September or so. Be good to get away. It's been 2 years, so yeah, for good reason. Gorgeous. Part.
If only I was still on Facebook.
Yeah, well, part wedding and then part honeymoon, so we'll, before I come home and dive back into contemporary financial management and some strategic finance and stuff like that, so, but yeah, anyway. So, yeah, so the G7, that happened, like you'd mentioned, in the town that I'm going to be going to stay at, and I hope all of that is gone from that area when I'm there, so...
Oh, I'm pretty sure the residuals will be left for any Americans nearby. Like, what did you do?
You know, I've been overseas a bit. Like, I'm fairly fortunate to have spent a lot of time in a number of countries, and countries that are very different from one another, cultures that are different, languages that are different, other sides of the globe. I actually realized that I have not traveled internationally since the president of the United States was elected in 2016, 2017. And I wonder if at like what point, I don't know if I'm going to articulate this well, but I think early in his administration, if I had gone to a different country, I found I probably would have almost having to like defend myself as if like I created the problem. But I think that's what happens, is you become sort of a proxy, or you become a representative of all the problems that are going on in your country. as opposed to, like, for example, I travel overseas when Obama was in office, and it was just like, wow, especially in Germany, he's like kind of God's gift to the world kind of thing. However, I haven't traveled when this president has been in office internationally. So I'm curious to see, maybe the whole world is just so worn out that they're like, do you like him or do you not like him? Like, I really don't like him. Okay, here's some more wine. Yeah, Vivi.
It's probably like withdrawal. At this point, people are like, man, I need to detox. Whether you love him or hate him, there's certainly no middle ground, apparently. I'm one of a largely extinct breed here, apparently. But there's a big feeling of fatigue with the whole thing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and...
I mean, well, it only blows sometimes.
Yeah, there's certainly a fatigue here. I think that's the best way to describe it. That I guess maybe if you're a diehard supporter, there's never of any fatigue, even if it's positive, because it's just always winning. But I
don't think they could say that with a straight face.
I guess. I don't know. I don't
know. You're not exhausted with the self-inflicted wounds yet.
I would say that it isn't just exhausted by him. I think if you have your finger on the pulse at all in politics and just culture in the United States today, I think it's just an exhausting place. I think that's what I would tell anybody internationally. Like, what's going on in America right now? I just think everyone is exhausted. And I think everyone wants there to be change. Again, I come back to the point that we harp home on this podcast a lot, is for the most part, I think most Americans want the same exact thing. We have a different way of going about it, but it's so exhausting getting to that point.
It leaves me as confused and bewildered as Rosie O'Donnell's children on Father's Day. But the reality is, look, the man went to Washington, D.C., as Susan Sarandon put it, to overturn the tables, crack the whip in the temple, if you will, and he has certainly done that. And some of his most diehard supporters, including those in the media, who, as I sent you the link, have recently, there's been a little bit of backlash and a bit of good for the goose, good for the gander type stuff for the mainstream media. But some of these folks are emboldened by, I'm assuming you saw President Macron's reaction to the Amazon fires, and this spreading this myth that by and large the Amazon is burning up and it's destroying the source of the Earth's atmosphere, and it's going, you do realize these are controlled fires, that it's virtually impossible to set fire to all of the Amazon, right? That doesn't help. Because his supporters then get to say, you see, that's why he and the president of Brazil, that's why they're not sending money. And so just one little snippet like that validates this whole just nonstop series of crises.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a lot to unpack here, because, and we can start with Amazon, we can start with the G7, we can start with a few things. And I do take your point that the media itself,
They deserve everything. I texted you that everything that opposition group is giving them, they deserve every bit of it.
I think here's the other part of the fatigue, right? I do, when we start to research for this podcast, or I just start to garner ideas, formulate my thoughts, you know, I do go to news outlets, and to see I remember being fairly active in politics, in at least interested in it when Obama was in office, and you never saw the president's name across every news outlet every single time you effing opened it. And
we never elected a reality star.
Yeah, I think the big piece of this is I've resigned to the fact that a lot of these what would be considered neutral media sites really do have a bias. I mean, it isn't as if the president, everything that the president is doing is wrong, or I should say it isn't as if the decisions that his administration makes, minus the maybe more like morally potentially egregious things, and I don't mean that. A lot of it just, it's through the lens by which you look, right? And not the sort of ridiculous asshole things that he says, but like deregulation. And and I think, like, that's not an evil thing. It's just a theory, right? It's like a political theory.
I'm glad you approve.
And, you know, and it's not that I necessarily approve of it.
Talking to someone, as you know, who is pro-deregulation and pro-tax cuts.
Exactly. And... I mean, do I think spewing more methane into the atmosphere is like, where's the trade-off? Like more money, short-term revenues
for more pollutants,
for methane and pollutants in the atmosphere. Like, I don't know if that's.
I think you can deregulate without increasing pollution, believe it or not.
Yeah, I think you can. So anyway, the point being, everything. Like, I don't see a lot of articles like that in the mainstream media that really point to sort of the nuances of this. Like, hey, I would love to see an article on CNN.
That's what I mean. And being one of the last of a dying breed as a centrist.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be helpful. And, you know, maybe I have to go to places like The Economist to find that, which is fine. But I certainly read those too. But it would be nice to see that on more of what's supposedly a neutral, fairly accessible, in terms of the average individual and having accessibility. It would be nice to see something written or something debated along the lines of, is it possible to have climate change with deregulation? Because I think if you really could make the case, then I think a lot of people would be on board. But anyway, the point, and this kind of segues into what happened at the G7. Now,
yes.
Look, the president, as we know, pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and I think a lot of people were really butthurt about that. And I can't say that I was thrilled or anything that he pulled out of it. It's like, I realize he's trying to leverage this position in the world and trying to make people more accountable. For God's sakes, man, just can we just collaborate for once with people in this world? Like everything we've done has really been such a disaster, and it's going to undermine everything the United States has done. Like, we can't stay in the Paris Climate Accord. Jesus Christ.
I think that's his point, is all we've done is collaborate. And look what that's gotten us. That's his point. I'm not saying that.
I mean, it's a weird point. But anyway, so this leads to the G7 summit, which every major leader was at the climate. First off, let's just back up. Let's just back up. Because didn't the guy not want to go in the first place? He pretty much was like, I can't verify that. Do I have to? I mean,
he hasn't called me lately.
No, but I think there were some reports about the fact that
he wasn't
entirely stoked about having to go to the G7 in the first place. So then he got there, and there's a couple of weird things that happened. You can fill in the pieces here, but
yeah.
So one,
there were
one, Macron invited
the foreign minister from Iran.
Yeah, out of nowhere. And so that was fun. And then what else? Boris Johnson showed up. Yep, Boris Johnson showed up. God, we could have a whole Brexit talk.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, the Queen approved suspending Parliament for 5 weeks.
Holy shit.
You read about that, right?
Yeah, so...
The Queen approved that. Like, I was kind of wondering, but yeah, so well, pretty much Boris is going to get his way. Anyway.
There's a number of things that could happen with that. We can tangent. All right, so we're going to go back to the G7 with Boris Johnson and the Iranian. But let's just say, for those of you who have not been following Brexit, Boris Johnson, in about 2 weeks' time, will suspend Parliament for 5 weeks, which gives them, a very short window to which Great Britain could crash out of the EU.
And remember how I was making that joke, make England matter again?
Yeah.
Well, they matter again.
So there's a number of things that could happen. Number one, they could crash out. They could literally crash out with no deal. The second, it would be tough because the PMs could write a bill on legislation. It would have to pass the House of Lords
in order
to stop the suspension. Essentially, there could be a vote of no confidence, but at the end of the day, who knows what would happen after that? So there's a high probability now that Great Britain could crash out of the EU.
And just a week ago, it came out that somebody went in and drug tested the back of the toilets in Parliament. I know this is going to shock you, but the majority came back positive for cocaine. That's not a joke. Wow. That happened, and I'm going, that explains so much.
Well, so anyway, Boris Johnson flies down, and most definitely trying to show face with a lot of EU leaders, a lot of, because I think he does want to negotiate a deal. I think he does. I think he's trying.
He has to negotiate a deal, and he has to negotiate one with the U.S.
But it's crazy that he puts the suspension on. And then here's the thing. It's the suspension. If it's supposed to leverage the EU, the EU has already said, y'all go ahead. Like, we've got everyone else here. Y'all just go. Like, do your thing. There's not, you're going to be far worse off crashing out with no deal. And we can turn around and go, you're an idiot. Like, that's it.
He's betting everything on a deal with President Trump.
I don't know, man.
He's betting everything on a man who thinks he has him over a barrel.
Well,
so I don't know if that's a savvy bet or not, but that's got to be. There's only so many ways about this, Nate. They can't stay encapsulated in the United Kingdom by themselves. They're not going to trade with Russia and China more. They're clearly making overtures to America.
But So that's the trade deal they're going to America? I mean, it's good.
It
has to be, though, right?
Right. I'm doing simple subtraction here.
But this is what I ask. Are they really making out?
You're willing to gamble your future, your country's future. Forget your political future. You're willing to gamble everything on a deal with President Donald John Trump.
Who is arguably possibly in office for only, another 18 months?
I don't care if he's in office for another 4 years. He is, and this is nonpartisan. If you don't agree with this, folks that like him, I'm sorry for you. He is easily the most unpredictable president we've had in the modern era.
Well, yeah, I mean that's why China.
You're gonna bet on him?
Can't really. I wouldn't bet on the president in a second.
Being consistent.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, being consistent.
I'm saying it's consistency. China's a different story because they want to act tough. We've done real damage. Whether we should have done it is irrelevant. It's been done. But as far as Britain goes, hey, I hope it works out for the best.
There's a number of things that could happen. I've been incredibly surprised with what has happened with Brexit so far in terms of extensions, etc. But I mean, there's going to be a point where the EU says
they've already said it. There's no renegotiating this deal. They said it three times now.
This is it. And there's going to be no more extensions. You don't get another.
No, they've said that's it.
Yeah. So. Again, there's a number of reasons. There's been a lot of speculation in terms of what is Boris Johnson's ultimate goal here? Like, what does he really feel? What's his gut feeling going with? And so five. Anyway, so
he's betting. In my view, he's betting on the exertion of public pressure via the U.S. Congress to force a deal with America because we're not going to turn our backs on the UK. We're not going to do it when it comes to, by and large, the United States Congress.
It is September Well, it's almost September 1st. That means they have less than 60 days to negotiate a trade deal with the United States.
Well, that's what I mean. It's a good thing it's the United Kingdom.
Good Lord.
I don't know outside of France who else we would do this with.
I don't know. Let me step outside and take a sniff and see if the pace of our democracy has changed. 60 days? Oh, yeah. No, it's the same.
Jesus. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about I'm still 14, 15 months in from one veteran now for approval for an appointment to federal employment. Still waiting. So 60 days, for a whole
trade deal?
Massive trade deal. Yeah, I'm right there with you.
You got it. So Boris Johnson shows up, the Iranian prime minister. That just kind of was weird with Macron, but nothing really came of it.
There's this bizarre spat between France and Brazil over insulting the French first lady, apparently.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bolsonaro, which is the president of Brazil. Look, you know what?
Big Trump ally.
Look, man, here's the thing.
Brazil's president loves Trump.
God, these guys are all just, they're assholes. I'm not saying that they're... But they're dickheads.
It's like Chris Rock said, all these firemen that hang out together, all these doctors hanging out, all these cops, all these hoes hanging out together, you're the only non-ho? Yeah. Same thing applies here. It's like, no, look at the people that are hanging out here together. The president of Brazil.
Well, so he made a comment.
Like hungry.
He basically made a comment about Macron's wife, who happens to be a fair bit older than Macron himself.
Younger than Joe Biden.
That's true. Making a joke about her appearance and about her age and stuff like that in relation to his wife. And
it's not cool.
It's just not cool. I mean, here's the thing. I don't think
she's attractive.
Here's the thing. If it's just Joe Blow out on the street talking shit on social media to his other friend, like, I don't care. But it's world leaders. These guys set the tone. And just Bolsonaro's kind of an ass from the beginning, and I know he kind of plays this tough guy, and there's a lot of, like, I feel like there's a lot of dudes out there that are just really trying to overcompensate with their leader, and that's just the way
he's
I feel with Bolsonaro.
Overcome the highest AIDS rate in the industrialized world.
What?
Brazil?
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Highest rate in the world.
I'm sorry, you broke up there. What did you say about the HIV rate?
It's the highest rate in the industrialized world, Brazil.
Yeah. So what's he gonna do? Bring morality back to Brazil? Like, no, the guy's kind of a dick. He, like, a lot of stuff he said, he's just kind of a dick. Like, it doesn't jive with 2019 culture anywhere.
Yeah, that always jives. Yeah. Well, even 100 years ago, that's always a way to make friends, insult somebody's wife.
I don't know. So anyway, and that all stemmed from the fact that Macron, who has taken quite a stance as maybe arguably the world's biggest, in terms of a leader, the biggest climate.
The leader of the free world.
Climate advocate. I really do. I think, especially since the United States dropped out of the Paris Climate Accord, I think Macron's really stepped up as the leader of sort of the climate change movement for better.
He's stepped up as the leader of the global war on terror.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you could argue that in some sense, but he essentially offered...
After Mali, and we're getting out.
Yeah. He offered $20 million, I think it was, to help fight the fires in the Amazon. I am not here to say whether they were as big as they were or as small as they were.
What are you here to say?
Yeah, I wasn't there. I don't know. All I know is that from all scientific reports, it was way bigger than usual. It's not unusual for there to be fires. There just happened to be a shit ton of them. And it also happened to, a few of them happened to be started by people. So if there was more, it really kind of, we're at
there's
the point.
Layers. There's many layers to this.
There is. Here's the thing. I'm not going to go into climate change too much. I would just say, think about it. Like, is it worth it to just destroy shit, let it burn? Like, I don't know. Even if I don't know definitively about the science, I can imagine that burning a large amount of trees that convert carbon dioxide to oxygen, burning those down, just probably not that great, right? So anyway, so he essentially says, F off, I don't want your money. Come back
because
to the G7.
Because he felt insulted.
Because he felt insulted, and then insulted Macron's wife.
Right, which seems it's like, hey, I don't like the way you offered to give us money for our fire, so, hey, it's ugly.
So, and of course he did that because he didn't want to, that would be an admittance that there's actually something terribly wrong. Okay. So then there's we fast forward to the climate change meeting, in which lo and behold, who didn't show up? All the major countries had representatives, at this meeting. And it's like, why can't you just go? Why?
Who?
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Why can't you just...
Let me read you a quote of his.
Just why scheduling conflict or not? The people that you said you were scheduled to speak with were at the climate change meeting.
Here's what he said. Here's what he said, and I quote. This isn't a joke.
Oh, God. Okay.
This is a quote. I'm an environmentalist. A lot of people don't understand that. I have done more environmental impact statements probably than anybody that's, well, I guess I can say definitely because I have done many, many, many of them. End quote.
Oh my God. When was that?
That was the press conference after the G7, Nate. Now, regardless of how one feels about the climate change crisis or its causes or whatever.
I'm going to drop the first F-bomb. What the fuck? Like,
you're an environmentalist?
That is the leader of the United States, folks. I'm not saying I like him or I hate him. I'm just saying that is the leader of the United States addressing the global climate crisis. Again, let me prep it up. I want you to read the quote one more time. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the leader of the free world, President Donald J. Trump, is going to give a press conference on climate change.
Right. I'm an environmentalist. A lot of people don't understand that. I certainly don't. I have done more environmental impact statements, probably than anybody that's, well, I guess I can say definitely, because I have done many, many, many of them. That's a real quote.
Sir.
And then, the other one that was really good about this topic, about the question posed to him was, what do you think the world should be doing about climate change, and do you still harbor that skepticism? He said, I'm not going to lose that wealth. I'm not going to lose it on dreams, on windmills, which frankly aren't doing too well. I'm not going to lose it. And also on France, he said, France is a great nation. It's being run. A lot of things are happening. You can't make this up. On equalizing trade with China, it gets better. Again, this is all real, I swear. He says, on equalizing trade with China, it should have been done by Bush. It should have been done by Clinton. Double Bush.
He did not say double Bush.
Yes, he did. I will send you this. This is a transcript,
my
friend.
Holy shit.
Double Bush. Double like Bush. I could do so much with that that I'm not going to do.
So, ladies and gentlemen, does it surprise you that the president of the United States maybe didn't want to go to the G7. He literally was like, they're like, hey, sir, we'd just like to kind of, we got some focus groups here, like you to just go in front, see, maybe get some feedback where people are feeling, where the pulse is at in terms of some climate change pressers, some trade war pressers. He's like, first off, I don't even want to go. I got it. Because believe me, I got it.
Believe me. Nobody knows having it more than me, let me tell you.
So, anyway, I mean, there literally is almost no substance to this podcast episode because there's no substance to the leader of the United States.
Yeah, what substance would they like for us to review?
Listen, not only did the president blatantly lie about, well, okay, it wasn't that he lied. He said he had a scheduling conflict for the climate change.
I don't know.
The people he said he had a meeting with were the
leaders. All I know is they were in a room without him.
Yeah, their leaders were at the climate change meeting. So
I don't care if they were at a meeting about Zippy the clown, okay. you know, whoever. Bonzo.
Don't you think even you're saying I don't care what the meeting was, if it's all those guys
without him.
If all those guys are there, the president needs to damn well be in the seat. And because
I don't care if he needs to be there. My point is, the place he said he was going to be at, those two countries were on camera and he was not.
Exactly. So what that means, he was leading, he was meeting with, like, who? Narendra Modi. He said he was meeting with India, and Narendra Modi was sitting right there.
Proxy, a hologram. I mean, the other quote, this is the shortest one, but I feel like this might be an appropriate
I dropped our first F-bomb, so.
Well, he said, so I don't do things for political reasons. And that's the point at which I hit the space bar on the whole transcript from watching this because I couldn't contain it. I don't have anything against the man, okay? And I do like the deregulation and the tax cuts, okay? And also getting us out of la guerre pour toujours, all right? Endless warfare, forever war. There are some things that the First Step Act, I seriously approve of that this administration has done. But this is Disneyland.
It's garbage. That's what it is. The whole thing is garbage. It really is a dumpster fire. And look, I am not liberal. I am not conservative.
Oh, yes,
I try to find as much nuance in this as I can. Someone show me the nuance. It's a dumpster fire. It was embarrassing.
There's no way to get around someone who. Okay, look, all politicians do things for political reasons. You stopped being a non-politician once you became president of the United States. I think that's fair to say.
So maybe all of this is just, it isn't, I find personally, like, it isn't because I'm left or right, or I come a bit almost politically alone in a weird way. I find the man exhausting. Like, it's to me personally, we're at the point where I think we've just, we have exponentially decreased in almost the value of Trump himself from when he started. His just own stock has depleted. He didn't get wiser. He didn't get more gray hairs from contemplating thought and the issues of the world. He just got, like,
how could you ever tell?
He got worse. I mean, it just got he is not an articulate gentleman in the first place, and he's just,
oh, he's articulate.
His own precious, bless your heart, kind of way.
He doesn't articulate the things that you necessarily want to hear. But
Hold on. It isn't the way I want to hear. Who wants to hear it? It's worse than.
Well, what about this? This made me feel better about life when he said, "People very much like me. Many people.
People very much like me. Many people."
Well, he said it.
People very much.
You can't make this up.
Okay, do you really, when we're talking about the president's articulation, when you said it's not the way that I would like to hear it, we're not talking about, like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, this guy.
Nate, I'm trolling you.
Okay,
man.
All right, good. I just needed to make sure that.
No,
you
man,
were trolling,
it's out of
and
control.
Not serious. Because,
like, look,
I know people that I took care of that have had strokes that articulate better than the president of the United States.
To his defenders, I have articulated a number of things that I approve of that this administration has done that he's gotten behind, okay? The First Step Act alone, okay? The deregulation and tax cuts alone. There's a number of things. Getting us out of forever war, all right? There's a lot of things that I can get behind policy-wise that this administration has done. Personality-wise, honestly, the nicest way I can put this is Disneyland.
Yeah, it's exhausting. Disneyland.
And I've never wanted to go back to Disney.
Uh-huh. I know.
It is a dumpster fire. And I'm going, I don't know. I hope to find out. I mean, I feel like he's trolling.
The president trolls.
One thing.
The president trolls. He tweeted, what was it about Greenland? He tweeted a photo of a Trump Tower on Greenland, and he goes, "Don't worry, I promise I won't do this." Like that, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's kind of funny. It's funny, but
it was.
But
and saying he was the chosen one.
Jesus,
it was great, man. I was watching this live.
Do we even talk about that?
No.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's been a while.
Yeah, it's.
You know what? We can do Greenland The Chosen One and The Golan Heights all in one go. Because remember, he said that. I've wanted to do The Golan Heights for a long time. Yeah, it's like The Dougie, only different.
I forgot about The Chosen One.
Just you think about President Trump doing The Dougie.
King of the Jews doing The Dougie, huh?
Well, when you frame it that way, I mean, come on, man.
Well, hey, look,
this feels like an appropriate place to stop.
Yeah, it does. I will say that I don't know how constructive this was in terms of illuminating or elucidating anything for our audience, and more of just a vent session over the last...
We just hit on 4 dozen topics.
We did. So I hope, as a listener, you were able to keep up and get nothing of substance other than the fact that the President of the United States didn't do shit at the G7 summit and look like a buffoon. Definitely... sounded like a buffoon.
Wait a minute. If our audience, including the new folks, if you were to Google, or if I had my way, if you were to Bing the phrases, the topics that we brought up, in reality, you would learn a hell of a lot about what's been going on, because we did just run the gauntlet.
We did.
I mean, it's not pretty.
Yeah, we did Brazil, wives. Amazon, France, G7, Brexit, Boris Johnson, yeah. Narendra Modi, China.
That wonderful press conference you got a few clips of.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, we did good. Under 45 minutes, and we spent the first 10 minutes talking about...
Electric Blues.
Yeah. Damn.
Yeah, man.
Damn.
Well, shit. Bordeaux, we talked about President Trump. He says a lot of people don't know this, but I'm an environmentalist. I didn't know that.
He does many environmentalist things.
Yes, yes. Like and raking, a lot of
like
people
raking the
like
forest.
Him.
Fuck. All right. I'm not going to. Yeah. Wow. Anyway. Well, listen. Let me just take a.
Yeah.
Take a deep breath here. And let me say that. We do have a narrowing of the Democratic field. That's happening.
Oh, yeah. Senator Gillibrand.
Yeah, she's gone.
There needs to be about 4 others gone.
Yeah, good old Andrew Yang still in there.
Yeah, I mean, I hate it, but Tulsi Gabbard needs to go. There's a lot of folks under 2% that need to go.
Well, she'll be gone soon. I mean, most of those people that didn't make the Democratic debate will be done soon. I mean,
they're going to keep sucking up oxygen, I guess, in the meantime.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter.
It
doesn't, because
at the end of the day, you already know what the choice is.
Well, it's Biden.
It's between President Trump and anybody else.
Yeah, pretty much. So, I don't know. We'll see. I'm curious to
like
see.
Like or not.
Well, we'll see how, Warren and Sanders are definitely both still polling behind Biden. There's really no change. Like, there's no point in talking about
it. Yeah, except for Monmouth's monstrosity of a poll. There's another topic.
Who's that?
Monmouth University in New Jersey. Yeah. They released this poll that showed Biden at 19% and Warren and Sanders both at 20% and this huge shift of like 13 points nationally. Come to find out, they polled less than 400 people. Yeah, it was like, y'all, I wouldn't have released that poll.
Woof. That was commissioned by the...
That was the, by the progressive left Sanders Warren Commission.
The mathematics department by a project by the students who are just starting statistics.
Yes, like how can we embarrass
had a
future Monmouth poll?
Had a deadline. They're like, fuck it.
It was 328 people.
Let's just knock on these doors, guys.
It started this huge swell 2 days ago of Biden's lead is evaporated by 13 points. Not saying it hasn't, but you got to do better than that. It was less than 400 people they polled.
Yeah, they're like, man, it is summer. We're starting. It's football season. I just want to tailgate. Like, it was just
dear God, who's watching football at Monmouth?
Yeah, who we got? Who we got? We got 4-3-3. Yeah, that's fine. It's a good sample size. Release it. Let's go. Granted,
do they even have athletics?
Most progressive area as well. Like, stupid.
Yeah, it's the one progressive area of New Jersey.
Hey, look, it doesn't matter what college you are. If you got a football team, people are in a parking lot somewhere drinking beers.
Well, that's what I mean. Do they have one?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, a lot of folks in New Jersey and West Virginia are Penn State fans. I mean, good for them, Penn State and Rutgers. But it's like, y'all, I wouldn't have released that poll and admitted it. Inflate that. Be like, hey, we polled 3,000 people.
That's statistically relevant.
Yeah, I mean, 320, I think it was 328 people.
God, you gotta love statistics.
Going, you couldn't have said 350?
Yeah.
328, sir.
It's a good solid number.
Yeah. Biden's lost his lead.
Ugh.
Like, I'm not sure that's true.
Like, I don't know. It seems off. Where did you just pull that? See, like, oh.
Right, let's see. Let's do that one again.
Oh, God. So, well, hey, my friend, 45 minutes. I think we've hammered a lot home. It'd be enough to digest here. As always, listeners from both foreign and domestic, international and domestic here
thank
at
you.
Home. Thank you, as always. If you would like to get in touch with us, reach out on, leave some comments on any of our social media outlets. Go to the website, see more opinion pieces, and where a lot of the minds and the people that help contribute to this podcast get to express their opinions a little bit more freely. If you think you've got a great opinion, hit up one of us up. You'll find us, obviously, on the socials and on Podomatic, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. I think we've got our emails floating around somewhere as well.
Yeah, they're on there, but nothing else. Modstate at modstate.com. Yeah, please opine.
Yeah, let us know. We'll maybe you send us something good. We'll read it on the air if you've got a good opinion. Although if you have a bad opinion, we'll.
Hey, we've done both.
We have. So, well, my friend, until next time.
Au revoir.